We're holding on Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, second line. We learned yesterday a case where a man says to his wife that the future children that you're going to have, now in the Mishnah we had talked about when his wife is pregnant, and he says that the unborn baby, when it's born, that the unborn baby should get X amount of money, and we have the whole discussion of Huna and of Nachman, whether that, and other Amoraim, whether such a thing works, but here we were talking about she's not even pregnant yet, and he's saying the future children that I have with you, this was a second wife, are going to inherit all my property. So his older son from a previous marriage came and complained. So his father said, you'll get a portion equal to one of them. Now the question is, since the one of them doesn't exist yet, and they can't be koina, according to anybody, does that mean that the son is not getting any special share of his own? He's just getting the ordinary share that he would get as one of the Yerushim, or do we say that since he singled them out and said, you are going to get like them, and he at least exists, then maybe that means he gets a portion. So the Gemara had compared it to a case where a person says, atva chamur kni, or kni kachamur, that if you were to say to somebody, you're going to acquire a portion in these nechosim like a donkey. Now, a donkey is not able to be koina, then we would say that he's not koina either. And we said that Rav Ovin had agreed, Rav Yumi had brought up Rav Abohu had brought up that argument to one of the older Talmid Chachamim of that generation, Rav Ovin, and he accepted it. So, the Itmar, so in fact, we have a discussion about that point. Kni kachamur loikona. There's no question if somebody says to somebody else, you acquire something like this donkey. In other words, the same way as this donkey is able to acquire, the same way you will be able to. So it doesn't work, loikona, for sure he's not koina. Like I was saying yesterday, sometimes you read in the news about some old person who died and left all their money to their cats or whatever. In halacha, that wouldn't work. What about if he says, at v'chamur? What about if he says, you and the donkey should both acquire the nechassim? So what happens then? Now you have a machlokas. Rab Nachman omar kona mechze, Rab Hamnuna lo omar, well, Rab Nachman omar kona mechze. Rab Nachman says, at least he's acquiring half of it. Because what he's saying is, between you and the donkey, both of you should be koina. You're going to get half, the donkey is going to get half. Well, the donkey can't get anything. Therefore, it means this person that he spoke to gets the half. Rav Hamnuna amaloy amaklum. Rav Hamnuna says what he said doesn't count for anything. He's not koina anything because he said one kinyan that he included both of them. He said you and the donkey both be koina. And since the donkey is not able to be koina, so therefore it means, says Rav Hamnuna, he wasn't really meaning to be makna anything to the other person. So he wasn't really meaning to be makna to the donkey because it can't be koina. Therefore, we would say what was said at the same time as it, you be koina to the person, also isn't going to work. Rav Sheshes Amar Kona Hakol. Rav Sheshes says what's going to happen is he's going to acquire everything because, again, given that he knows that a donkey is not going to be a koina, so therefore it means that in effect he's thinking to himself, whichever of them is able to be koina will be koina. Had it been two people, each one of them would be able to be koina half. Now that he says, you and a donkey, and the donkey is not able to be koina, so what it means is you acquire whatever the donkey is not able to, says Rav Sheshes, which is going to wind up being all of it. So three different opinions about what happens over here is, according to Rav Sheshes in particular, we're saying the fact that he included in something or someone that's not able to be koina doesn't prevent anything. So now applying that to the earlier machloikas, then that would mean that would mean when he says that you, my older son, should get a chelek together with the unborn babies, and the unborn and unconceived babies are not able to be koina yet, then it would mean that he should be able to be koina something at least. Tosfos points out that the halacha is in fact like Rav Nachman in this three-way machlokas. So in that case, what he says, you and the donkey acquire, then he would acquire half. And the same thing with the case of the unborn children and the older child, it would mean that he would be
it would mean that he'd be getting half.
So the Gemara says, Omer of Sheshes, Menah Minala. So Rav Sheshes says, where do I get this idea that just because he mentioned the donkey in it doesn't prevent any of the Kenyan from taking place? And in fact, that the, the person to with whom he said, you and the donkey acquire, is going to end up acquiring all of it. And the same thing in the case of the older son. Rav Sheshes says, I can derive that from the following din. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi. Now this din is going to be in connection with the dinim of Truma.
Could you hear me? Is Moshe also on the line now?
No.
Because no. It's a very unclear connection. I was just thinking if you could try to reconnect, because it's a very basic.
Okay. Rav Sheshes is going to bring a proof from the dinim of Truma for this concept that he's saying that just because you have something included in there which can't work, in this case that you have the donkey who's not able to be kind of, that we should say that he's kind of something. So Rav Sheshes actually says he's going to be kona all of it. Rav Nachman had said he would be kona half. Rav Sheshes is saying he's kona the whole thing. So Rav Sheshes says, Menah Minallah, where am I getting that from? D'tanya, we learn in a braisa in connection with the dinim of Truma. Rav Yossi Omer, Ein lecha mar b'kishus el pnimi shaboy. When you have a cucumber, the bitter part of it is going to be the inside. I don't know if necessarily this is the same as the cucumbers we have nowadays, but whatever the case, if there's going to be a bitter part, it's going to be on the inside. Now, when you're taking truma, you're supposed to take mina yofa ala yofa. You're supposed to take from the good quality stuff to pater the rest of the good quality stuff. You shouldn't be taking the bad on behalf of the good. So the problem is not so much that it is bitter inside, Rashbam learns, but that it might be, and then therefore, so it comes out. Now, you're supposed to take truma, the average amount that you take is 1/50. The problem is that here you're going to take truma from the cucumber, not necessarily is the whole 1/50 going to be from the sweet part of the cucumber. So therefore, so says Rabbi Yossi, l'fichach k'shu torim. Therefore, when you're taking truma for cucumbers, you're taking, let's say, one cucumber on behalf of another 49. Mosif alachitzin shaboy. You have to add an extra amount of cucumber from someplace else, from a different cucumber, at least the size of a kibetza, the totem, and then you take it together as truma. That way, you have that the entire 1/50 is going to be the sweet part. So now says Rav Sheshes, now let's consider Amai. Now still, when he says this one cucumber should be truma for the other ones, what good would it add the extra sweet one? When you're giving to begin with a cucumber and part of it is sweet and part of it might be sour and not edible, isn't that a case of atva chaburhu? So Rav Sheshes says, in effect, what you have is that you have part of it is not valid truma because it's bitter, and part of it would be because it's sweet, but you're declaring them as truma together, and we're saying it's effective except that you have to add extra. So, but why would the truma be valid truma in the first place? Wouldn't that be, you're saying one part is valid truma because it's sweet. The other part may not be because it's sour, it's bitter. And nevertheless, together they work as truma. And the only thing you need to do is because you need to have at least the entire amount of the truma should be sweet. You don't want any of part of it to be inedible. Then therefore you have to add extra from a different cucumber. But the point still is that you see that it does work as truma. By the same token, Rav Sheshes says, when it comes to atva chamur, it should work as that he's koina as much as he can, which is going to end up being the whole thing. That's all according to the Rashbam. Tosfos actually learns the Tosfos learns the case different, because after all, if we can assume that all cucumbers are sweet on the outside and bitter on the inside, the fact is that so you're going to have the sweet part of the piece of the one that he declared as truma will be on behalf of the sweet parts of the other ones, the bitter part on behalf of the bitter, and that's that. You don't need anything else. So rather, Tosfos explains what we're not talking about is where you have reason to suspect that the whole batch of cucumbers are bitter on the inside. We're talking about that he took one particular one as truma, and then he opened it up, and it turned out that it was bitter on the inside. So now, a Mishnah in Masechta Trumas mentions that in that case, what he took so far is valid truma, but he's going to have to take truma all over again. Rabbi Yossi is saying you don't need to do that. All you need to do is add a piece from the outside layer of another cucumber onto what you already gave. Because even the one that turned out to be bitter on the inside, that doesn't affect the outside. The outside of it is still edible. In any case, the point is that at least according to that, then it comes out that just because part of it is bitter doesn't affect the validity of truma of the rest of it. The same way, just because part of the kinyan is supposedly going to a donkey, which in fact it can't because a donkey can't be koina, then that's not reason enough that we should prevent him from being koina at all. Like Rav Amnuna, or even that he should be koina only half, like Rav Nachman. Rather, Rav Sheshet says he's koina the whole thing. But the Gemara says that's not really a proof. Shiny Hosam, then you know what the difference is when it comes to Truma? The Minarais of Truma Mal Yisi. Because actually, Midaraisa, it would have been perfectly good Truma, even though part of it is bitter, as long as it's still like semi edible. How do we know that if a person takes truma from something that's not good, from something that's lesser quality, on behalf of something that's good quality, that midaraisa would be valid truma? Shenema, because the pasuk says it's speaking to the Levim, telling them about giving trumas meiser from their meiserishin. The pasuk says v'lo sisu olav chait. You will not bear any guilt when you take your trumas meiser, baharim chemes chelba mimenu, when you take off the fat, meaning the good part of it, as trumas meiser. Implying if you do take from the bad part, then you are bearing a sin. Now, v'im ena kodesh, now if it doesn't become truma or trumas meiser, nesius chet lama, then why would we even be talking about bearing guilt? There would be nothing for him, there would be no guilt for him to bear, because he tried to do something which is ineffective in halacha anyway. So you see from here that if a person takes from bad for good, he is committing an avera by doing so, because you should be giving the best for Hashem. The Rambam stresses the point. Always when a person is giving something to Hashem, whether we're talking about korbanos, whether clothing for a poor person, whether all kinds of things like that, if food for a poor person, it should always be the best that he has. But nevertheless, we're saying if he gives something inferior, then it still works. Only with the rabbanon do we say that he needs to add extra, or that he needs to take truma again, or whatever as the case may be. But that's not a proof over there. Over there, with the one cucumber that he took, whether we're assuming that all of them are sour like the Rashbam, or whether we're talking about that one particular one is sour on the inside like Tosfos. Either way, Midaraisa, it would have been valid truma, and therefore, Rav Yossi can say, okay, Midarabanan, all you need to do is add an extra kabeza from another cucumber. But that doesn't show Rav Sheshet, when he brought this point about truma, he was assuming that Daraisa, you would need to take the extra. And yet we see that the combination works, so therefore we can apply that to Afachamur. But now we're saying that no, Midaraisa, you wouldn't even need to combine it with anything else anyhow, because Midaraisa, it's not even a case of Hamur, because the bad and the good parts of the cucumber are equally well valid truma according to the Torah. I mean, it's just that one of them is the preferred thing to give and the other one is not. So therefore, so that's not a proof to the Atva Hamur case. So the Marshal and the Marshal and other Achronim discuss get into the discussion, and the Marshal asks, still, okay, in the case of the cucumber, though, you're still saying, even appointed of Shesh's original understanding, it means that the sweet part is covering the sweet parts of the other cucumbers, but you still need to add the kibetza in order to cover, but not all of it, because you don't have 1/50th, so therefore you end up needing to take a kibetza from another one. The same way, fine, we can say that it shows, not like Rav Hamnuna with Atva Chamor, that you're not acquiring anything, but why is Rav Shesha saying that shows you're acquiring the whole thing, rather than at least he should say, like Rav Nachman, that you're acquiring only half of it. So the Marshal discusses that even to begin with we knew that this whole thing of having to add more is Dirabbanan, and therefore he thought to say. So he thought that the little bit that you're adding extra is not covering the sweet part. So all of the name of Truma is Chal exclusively on the sweet part and not on the bitter part at all. And that would be similar to acquiring the whole thing after Hamer. And then Marsha also discusses it in detail over here and discusses the opinions of Tosfos of Rashbam and Tosfos in this, and how would Rav Nachman and how would Rav Hamnuna learn this case so that it doesn't contradict their opinions. In any case, the point is that Rav Sheshes had tried to bring a proof, but the Gemara says it's not really a solid proof. So the Gemara continues, Amalei Rav Mordechai le Rav Ashi. So in a later generation, Rav Mordechai pointed out to Rav Ashi, Masiv Rav Ivya Tiyuvta. Rav Ivya pointed out that I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Masechta, from a case in a Mishnah in Masechta Kiddushin on Rav Hamnuna and Rav Nachman. Here Rav Hamnuna is saying that when he says Atva Chamur, that you and the donkey both acquire, then he's not getting anything. And Rav Nachman is saying he's getting only half. So the question would be that Rashbam learns that the following question is going to be on both Rav Hamnuna and Rav Nachman. Where the implication of the case of the Mishnah over there would be on the face of it like Rav Sheshes, as we'll get to. We'll discuss also that different other Mephoshim talk about who the question is on. But let's start with the Rashbam, that the question is on Rav Hamnuna and Rav Nachman. A Mishnah says in Kiddushin, Maisa b'chomesh nashim, it happened once that there were five women standing together, overhen shtei achoyas, among them were two sisters, v'liket echad kakola shalteinim, a certain man collected a basket of figs, v'shalahen hoysa, now it actually grew in their field, v'shal shvias hoysa, but it was shmita year, so therefore it was hefker. Had it been any other year, then it would be gezel. The question is whether we can be Makadish with it, but here, so only because it was Shmita, then it can possibly work as Kiddushin. So he gives them the basket, the Omar, and he says, Harekochan Mekudoshisli Bekalkolazu, Bekalkolazois. He says, all of you are Mekudosh to me with this basket of figs. The Kibla Achas Mehenaide Kulon, one of the five women took it and accepted it on behalf of all of them. Now, the problem is that, now, first of all, the Rashbam points out, he brings from the Gemara and Kiddushin over there, that Rav explains over there are actually a number of dinim that you can learn from this Mishnah. You can learn that you are able to be Mekadesh a woman with Peiris Shvius. We don't say that since they're Hefker, you don't really have any ownership of them. You also learn from that you can't be Makadish with Gezel. Even you might say, what if he stole something from her herself and she's accepting it. Maybe she's willing to accept it back. Not only so she'll have her item back, but so that she'll accept it as Kiddushin. We say that no, it doesn't work. Only, so therefore only because it was Shmita does it work. We also learn that that one woman can be a shliach for another woman to accept the kedushin, even when they would make them all tzaris to one another. But if there weren't sisters involved over here, if there were five unrelated women, we'd say all five of them are mekodesh. The question, the twist is going to be because there are sisters involved. So we learn from that that when the one woman accepts the basket, even though it means that she, even though it means not only that she's mekodesh to him, but together with her four other women as well, and they're all becoming tzaris for one another, nevertheless, such kedushin is valid. The twist is here, though, that there were two sisters involved. Now, when a man is Mekadosh a woman, her sister becomes an erva to him. She's only mutter when the first one dies. So what happens? Omru Chachamim, ein achoyes mekudoshes. So the Chachamim said, the sisters are not mekudosh. Now, you actually have a discussion in the Gemara there in Kedushin, Machlokas Abaya and Rava, about you have a concept called Kedushin Shlenimsir Leviya, when you have Kedushin which cannot possibly result in Bia, which would be over here with the two sisters, which we don't even know which one was Mekodesh to him, and whichever one is, it blocks the Kedushin of the other. And each one in effect is blocking the Kedushin of the other. Abaya holds that such Kedushin would be valid Kedushin. The Gemara actually is going to explain in a couple of lines. The Gemara is going to bring Abaya's explanation. So let's actually get back to that. The point is, right now,
if one of the sisters says it was me that you gave it to, would that work?
If one of the sisters was what? Was needy? No.
If one of the sisters say it was me who you gave it to.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because he had all five of them there and he said all of you are Mekodesh to me. He said all of you. So the Chum said the sisters are not Mekodesh. Now, the implication is Achoyas who de'en Mekodeshes, so only the sisters are not Mekodesh, Hon Nochrius Mekodeshes, implying that the other three unrelated women are Mekodesh. Now, Vamai, now why should that be? Afachamurhi. Isn't that another example of Afachamur? You're trying to be Mekodesh women that you can't be Mekodesh together with ones that you could be Mekodesh. And we're saying that it still works, and the ones who are able to be Mekodesh are Mekodesh. Well, therefore, so that works out nicely according to Rav Sheshes, that with Af v'Chamur you get the whole thing. But how does that fit with Rav Nachman, who says that he gets only half, or Rav Hamnuna, who says that you don't get anything at all? So now that's according to. And Marsha adds over here, there's a long Marsha over here where he explains that part of the point is that we see that it is exactly a case of Kenyan. Only the three unrelated girls are coin of the basket. The two sisters are not. So therefore, so it should be the same as Af v'Chamur. With that said, though, there are other Mephoshim. Well, first of all, Tosfos over here discusses and says that the question is only on Rav Hamnuna, that you're not koina anything. At least even Rav Nachman, who says that you're koina half, at least that could be made to work over here because you're saying at least that the unrelated women are being koina something. So how can Rav Hamnuna say that you're not koina anything at all? So that was the question. Rav Ashi answers Rav Mordechai, and you know what? Now I understand. Hainu de chazoy Rav Huna bar Ivya b'chelma. Now I understand. I saw Rav Huna bar Ivya in a dream. Now I understand why Hashem showed me that, because the most of Rav Ivya tiyuvta, because you're telling me that Rav Ivya ask the following question, and therefore, in effect, I saw in my dream that, like, I'm sitting together with his son, Rav Huna, in order to hear his father's kasha, and in order that I should be motivated to come up with a good answer to the kasha. The answer is, Rav Ashi says, the lav mi ukimna, haven't we explained in that Gemara and Kedushin, the omer haru'uya mikem labia tiskadeshli, that it means that to begin with, he said, whichever one of you is going to be suitable for bia should be the one who is included in the Kedushin. In other words, to begin with, he's not saying all five of you, because that would be a problem, because then he can't be Mekadesh, the two sisters. It means that to begin with, he's saying, out of you five, whichever ones I'm going to be able to do bia with,
should be the ones that I'm Mekadosh. And therefore, to begin with, he's only mentioning three. In effect, he's only mentioning three out of the five of them and excluding the sisters. So that's not a case of Atma Chamur at all, because to begin with, he's not trying to be Mekadosh the sisters. So no proof from that one way or the other in favor of Rav Sheshes or against Rav Hamnuna or even against Rav Nachman. That explanation that he's saying Horu'uyu Lekem Mabia is actually according to Abaya in that Gemara over there. Rava actually has a different understanding over there of the case, because you have this machlokes of kiddushin shalaynim siru labia. If you have kiddushin was done, but there's no way that it's going to be able to result in bia, because with these sisters, either one that he's going to think that he's mekudesh to means that the other one is an erva to him, and the result is he can't do bia with either one of them. So there's a machloikas over there in Masechta Kedushin. Abaya holds that such Kedushin are nonetheless valid Kedushin. So therefore, in other words, we would have said that even the sisters are included, except they have a problem because you don't know which one he's Makodesh to, and the result would be that he would have to say Haru'uyu Labia Kiskadishli in order for it to work Bechlal. Otherwise we can't say that the sisters are not Mekudesh. We would say the sisters are both Mekudesh Misafik, and each of them is going to need a get from him Misafik, because he can't do Bia with either one. Rava gives a different explanation over there, and says that Kedushin Shalanyim Sudul Bia are not valid Kedushin, so therefore it doesn't matter what he says. Implicitly, the sisters are excluded because it's Loinim Sur Labia. In the end, the Gemara explains there, that's one of the six cases, Yal Kagam, where the halacha is like Abaya. That is the kuf of Yal Kagam, which is why Rav Ashi is bringing that answer over here of Abaya's. He doesn't even mention Rava's answer, because the Gemara ended up schlugging up Rava's opinion over there. Okay, so the point is that we don't have any proof from that against Rav Nachman or against Rav Hamnuna, and as Tosfos had said earlier, in the end, the halacha is like Rav Nachman. So if he says at the chamur kni, then the halacha is, since the donkey is not acquiring anything, then half of it remains unclaimed and the other half goes to this person that he was speaking to. Okay. New case. Ahuda Amalei Vedvesu. There was a man said to his wife, Rashbam also mentions, by the way, that the halacha is like Rav Nachman, that with Atma Chamor, he's koine half, as far as we learned before about Hamazakal Uber, Lichshatelid, we learned previously the machlokas, Rav Hamnuna and Rav Nachman, whether if he says I'm Mazaka to this unborn baby, and it'll take effect when the baby is born, then Rav Nachman has said that it works, and then Rashbam points out, by the way, the halacha is like Rav Nachman in that as well. So Rabbeinu Gershom learns that. So Rashbam doesn't say one way or the other. Rabbeinu Gershom says that he was a shchiv merah. The Ritva says it may have been a bori as well, and he makes a kinyan. Whatever. To Omer lo Ledvesu, he says to his wife, Nechose lishvul of Na'ulavnach. You, my nechosim should go to you and to your children. Now, here the children were already born. Now, the question is, what percentage is the wife getting? Omer Rabbi Yosef, Kansa Mechze. So Rabbi Yosef says that no matter how many children there are, she's acquiring half. When he said you and my children, then it means you're like one group of your own, and you get half, and all the children get the other half. So Rav Yosef says, where do I see that from? D'tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rebbe Omer, when the pasuk says about the lacham aponim, the pasuk says lacham aponim goes to Aaron and to his sons, that means mechzel Aaron, mechzel Levonov. Means half of it goes to Aaron, half of it goes to his children. Meaning when we divide up the lacham aponim, what we do is, We have 12 lacham aponim that are going to be split up among the mishmaris. Generally speaking, most of the time it's split up between the mishmar hanichnas, the new mishmar of koyanim that's coming on Shabbos to take over the avodah for the next week, and the mishmar yotze, the mishmar that finished their shift in the bismikdash and they're going to be leaving. So now what we say is, usually the division is, six for one, six for the other. Each of them gives half of what they receive to the Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Gadol ends up receiving Aaron, or whichever Kohen Gadol stands in for Aaron. And each generation gets half of the lacham upon him. So you got six of them, and the Mishmaris themselves between them have the other six.
So the same way.
Why don't we say like we said earlier that it means he making her an apotropos?
Because that's what if he gave her all the nechassim, it means he made her an apotropos. He always saying you and my sons, then it means that she's getting a portion. Now if he had said you get a portion like one of my sons, then it would mean obviously we see how many sons there are and we divide it accordingly. But now when he's saying you and my sons, meaning you're one group of your own and not an apotropos because it's not the entire nechassim. And your sons, so therefore we say the sons collectively make up one group and she makes up another group.
So and we don't say that from Aaron you can't bring fruit because Aaron is a male and here a female. A female doesn't usually get
has nothing to do because here we're not talking about from the point of view of Yerusha. Here we're talking about from the point of view of Matana. Either it's a matnas shchivra,
okay,
that's a matnas shchivra or matnas body, as the case may be. So, got it. Yeah.
Okay.
There is, by the way, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, also we're going to get to it later this year, Be'ez Hashem, that tells a famous story involving a Roman nobleman who converted to Yiddishkeit right before he was executed by the government, and he says that my possessions should go to Rabbi Akiva v'Chaverav, and the same thing, the Gemara explains it, the fact that he singled out Rabbi Akiva by name means Rabbi Akiva gets half of them, and then Chaverav, the other Chachamim, get the other half. So these are examples where when you mention one particular one, then it means that you're putting them, you're making them equal to all the other ones. So you're mentioning that there's a wife over here. The Gemara does mention that point over here. Amalei Abayev, the Shlema Hosam, Aaron Bar Chalukahu. You know what the difference is? Aaron, being a Kohen, is entitled to a portion of Lacham upon him. So even without the Pasuk mentioning him, he would still get a portion of Lacham upon him. So you would say Lahochi Porak Be'Rachmana. Therefore, you could say the Torah singled him out, the Mishka Pauga, to say that he gets half. Isha lav bas yerushi, but a wife is not normally somebody who yarshins. Daya shetito ke'echad min abanim. Wouldn't it be enough to say that she receives an amount equal to one of the other children? Says Abaya. So all it means is, in other words, because without mentioning her at all, she would have gotten nothing. Now, by mentioning her, he wants her to get a portion of the nechassim, but not necessarily half of them. So the Gemara asks in turn on Abaya, how can Abaya say such a point? There is, by the way, an interesting point in this regard. What happens if there's more of them than the ones that he didn't single out? So you'd have an example. Let's say he says that my nechassim should go to Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and the sons of Yehuda. So now by mentioning the sons of Yehuda, so he's making them a group of their own. So the Rambam and the Rosh hold that actually what it would mean is those sons, it would mean then that Reuben, Shimon, and Levi together get half and Yehuda's sons get half. Then the Ramban disagrees with that and says, one second, then you singled out Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. It comes out each of them is getting a lesser portion than otherwise. The whole point of the Gemara over here seems to be that they're getting a greater portion. So the Ramban learns that in that case, actually, then you would say, for example, that Yehuda's children would get a portion equal to any one individual of the ones that he singled out. So in other words, you'd say Reuben gets a portion, Shimon gets a portion, Levi gets a portion, and Yehuda's sons would get a portion equal to any one of them, not half of the nechassim. Whereas again, the Rambam is saying that Yehuda's sons all by themselves would get half, and Reuben, Shimon, and Levi between themselves would have to share the other half. Anyway, but that's kind of a side issue. But getting back to the Gemara over here, again, so Rav Yosef is saying that the wife gets half, and Abaya is saying the difference is, no, you could say that he only mentioned the wife in order to say that she should get anything at all, because without that, she wouldn't get anything at all. So the Gemara says, Amy, is that so? You're telling me Abaya that she wouldn't get the half? Such a case actually happened in the Hadar. The Agbe Shmuel Palga, and Shmuel sure enough said that the wife is entitled to half the Nechosim. But Tveria, such a thing also happened in Tveria. The Agbe Rabbi Yochanan Palga, and Rabbi Yochanan, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Tveria, also passed him that she gets half. The two, and furthermore, I'll give you another example where we see that by mentioning somebody individually, it means that half. Because there was a case Here's another proof. Ki oser Rav Yitzchok bar Yosef Omar, when Rav Yosef came from, when Rav Yitzchok bar Yosef came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he told the following story. Hahud Dmei Klila, it happened once that there was money that they needed to be raised for the king's crown. The Shadr Dmei Malka, Abuli Va'aisterugi. The palace, the government imposed that special tax for the crown on the Abuli and the Isterugi. So who are those? The Rashbam says Abuli means the rich people, and Isterugi means the governors. And he brings the word bully, the word bully in various places in Gemara means rich people, and Isterugi is related to the word Istrategi, which the Targum uses in a number of places to mean governors. It's related to the word strategy in English, in Greek, where it comes from, it means something like a general. So it would mean the rich people and the governors or the generals or something. There are other explanations. Rabbeinu Gershom says that it means the people of the city and the people of the villages. In any case, so who has to pay what percentage? Omar Rebbe, so Rebbe said, Nesu Abuli Palga v'Isterugi Palga, means that the Abuli are going to have to be paying half, and the Isterugi are going to have to be paying half. Evidently, both the Abuli and the Isterugi are Jews. Otherwise, Rebbe's psak, if they were goyim, is not going to mean much to them. I guess we learned from this, incidentally, that in Rebbe's times there were Jews who were able to serve as governors under Roman rule, because Rebbe lived, of course, at a time when the Romans were still ruling over Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so Rebbe says it means that because they mentioned the Abuli and the Isterugi, means each group is paying half. Now, even though one group is larger and the other, even though the Abuli are richer than the Isterugi, nevertheless, we're still saying it's half and half. So how can Abaya say that, how can Abaya say in this case with the wife and the children that she shouldn't get half? So the Gemara answers, Hoki Hashta, what kind of a comparison is that? Usually when the government would issue an order that a tax has to be paid, usually it would be imposed on the Abuli, on the rich people. The Isterugi, their job would be to help out with it, to contribute some, but not necessarily half. The Yoda Malka de Havokamasai, the king knows, the government, the emperor knows that the Isterugi are helping out. So Hashta de Maidikokasvi Abuli va Isterugi. So now when the king Bafarish writes out that I want the tax to be imposed on the Abuli and the Isterugi, then it means until now he knows the Isterugi are always paying something towards it. Now he's saying I want them to give more, I want them to give half, and the Abuli to give the other half. So in that case, that Lushan specifically is meant in order to say that each of them should get half. That doesn't necessarily show that, so in that specific case, then we say it means half and half, because otherwise, not mentioning the Isterugi at all, they still would have been contributing something, as opposed to in our case over here, where the wife wouldn't be yarshining anything at all, then we can say that once he mentions her, then it means that, like the pasuk la'aron levonav, that it actually does mean half and half. Okay. So no proof from that case. Well, the Gemara continues. Mostly Reb Zera. So Reb Zera says, now and by the way, as far as what Isterugi are, the Ritva gives yet another explanation that Isterugi means Faket, it means the poor people. So Avuli would be the rich people, Isterugi would be the poor people, and the point is, usually the poor people contribute something towards it, but not necessarily half, but here the king specifically wrote out, the emperor specifically wrote out, that it should be for the on the Avuli and the Isterugi, that he expects the poor to also up their contribution and give fully half of it. But in that case, because it's mentioned like that, because otherwise, as it is, they're contributing, as opposed to the case of the wife, where as it is, if he hadn't said anything, she wouldn't be getting anything at all. All right, the Gemara says, Mosi Reb Zera. Reb Zera says, I have a contradiction on Reb Yosef's opinion, that whenever you say that something is divided between this and that, it means half and half, so therefore, if he says to my wife and to my children, then it means each of them, each group is getting half. So Reb Zera says, so you're telling me that each one is giving half? Mostly Reb Zera says, I have a contradiction on that. We learn in a Mishnah in Menachos. If a person says, a person makes a neder, I'm obligating myself to bring a mincha of 100 isarin. Now the lahavi b'shnei kalim, and I'm going to bring that mincha in two separate kalim. Now the Mishnah describes over there in Masechta Menachos the maximum size mincha that you can bring in one keli is 60 isarin. You have different opinions over there, Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanakhama there in the Mishnah, where the Gemara says there, it's Rabbi Yehuda, says the reason is because the tzibur, either you have one time in the year, if the first day Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, if you calculate the amount of menachos that are brought together with the Tumidim and the Musafim, you have 61 Isarin. So therefore, so a Yochid should max out at 60, says Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon says that's not the reason, because after all, those 61 Isarin are in different kalim. They come with different karbonis. Rather, Rabbi Shimon says the reason is because the Chachamim figured out that 60 Isarin is the maximum that you'd be able to mix the flour together with the oil. A mincha consists generally of flour and oil plus the lavoina sprinkled on top. The flour and the oil don't have to be mixed. The Gemara explains over there, but it has to be possible to mix them. And Rav Shimon says, once you get beyond 60 Isarin, you're not going to be able to mix it. You're not going to be able to mix it thoroughly. So in any case, this person said he wants to bring 100 Isarin, but he said 2 kalim. So then maybe shishim b'kli echad v'aboyim b'kli echad. What he should do is 60 Isarin of his mincha should be in one keli and the other 40 in the other. So Rav Zera says, why? And the Mishnah continues, the Braisa continues, v'im hevi chamishim b'kli echad, v'chamishim b'kli echad yotza. But if he brings 50 in one and 50 in the other, then b'dievet he's yotza. Now, why would that be only b'dievet? Im hevi ein l'chatchil aloi. So you're saying only b'dievet 50-50 works. But if you're going to tell me in a case like this, it should always be split 50-50, then why, then l'chatchila should be able to bring 50 in one keli and 50 in the other. So the same way over here. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yosef, that in the case of his wife and his children, each of them gets 50% of the nechasim, when we see from this case of a mincha, that you don't necessarily split it 50-50, v'chatchila, you're supposed to split it 60-40. In fact, Tosfos points out, Rabbi Zera's svara is that, look, I understand he mentioned his wife. That should mean she should get a portion, like Abaye said, equal to one of the children, that she should get half. Then you should say, by the same token, by the mincha, then you should say that half of it should go in one and half in the other. So the Isachar Daidach, Kol Ki Hai Gavna, Pogo, if you're going to tell me that in such a case, it should be half and half, after L'chatchila Nami, then it should even be L'chatchila, that he can bring 50 in one keli and 50 in the other. So the Gemara answers back, Hochi Hashta. Again, how are you thinking to compare that case of the Mincha to our case over here? Hosam, in the case there of the Korban Mincha, Anan Sadi, the High Gavra Me'ikra L'Korban Godra Komachavim. We can be Aiden that to begin with, this person wanted to bring the biggest possible Korban. Now, he knows, though, that you can bring maximum 60 in one keli for either of the reasons that we said before, whether Rabbi Yehuda's reason or Rabbi Shimon's, so therefore he realizes he's going to have to divide it into two kalim. But at least he meant as much as possible the high dekam of a shnei kalim. The only reason he said two kalim, the other, the la'ef shalastui l'kli echad. He knows that you can't bring a mincha of 100 isarin in one kalim. But as much as he can put into one keli, then we should put it in the one keli because we assume he wants his korban to be as big as possible up to the maximum. As opposed to in the case of the wife over here, then we don't say that. So again, Tosfos points out the svara was to think that yes, he wanted the biggest possible korban, but nevertheless, we're still saying that we still should not follow that svara. We should still say that it means 50-50, and we don't. So then why by the wife? Granted, he wanted to give her something, but why should we say it means 50% of the estate? But nevertheless, the answer is that yes, in the case of the mincha, there's no choice, in the case of the mincha, he wants to give the biggest possible mincha. Therefore, we put 60 in one, as opposed to over here, it could mean that she should get only a portion equal to the other sons, but it could also mean that she gets half because he singled her out, and therefore we can say that she gets half. And the Gemara finishes off the Hilchah, come say to Rabbi Yosef. Now the Halacha is like Rabbi Yosef in his Machloikas, and with Rabbah, usually the Halacha would be like Rabbah, but in three cases, the Halacha is like Rabbi Yosef. The Sada Inyan Umechse. As far as the matter of a field, which was a case, there were a number of cases in the first parak of Ar Masechta involving the division of fields. You had a case, for example, of a man who inherited a field from his wife's family. Then later on, his father passed away, and they're dividing up the Yerusha, and he's saying, when it comes to giving me my portion of the Yerusha, my portion of the field, I want it next to the field that I already own. So is he entitled? Rava says yes, and Rabbi Yosef says that no, because they can argue that this particular piece of land is worth more than the other ones. And then the Gemara mentions two other cases over there, also involving the division of fields when it comes to dividing a Yerusha, where each time Rabbi Yosef points out a factor that not necessarily just because he wants something, he should get it. The other brothers can say there's reasons to divide it differently, and in each of those cases, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef. Inyan is something that we learned about in the previous perek, where you have people are sitting and where people did a kinyan on some kind of thing, and now the question is how long does he have to take back the thing that was confirmed with a kinyan. So we had Rabba saying as long as they're sitting there he can take it back, and Rabbi Yosef had said as long as they're involved with talking about that Inyan. Once they stop talking about that Inyan and went on to something else, then Rabbi Yosef says it's too late to change his mind. And again, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef. And the third one, Mechza, is our case over here where the wife does end up getting half and the other children end up getting half. Now here, unlike the other two cases, you don't have Rabba explicitly disagreeing with him. We didn't have Rabba anywhere in the sugya. However, however, Tosfos points out earlier in the Masechta that the Gemara knew that the question that Abaya asked over here actually came from Rabba. Because Rabba was Abaya's Rebbe, he was his primary Rebbe, and therefore when Abaya is asking the question on Rabbi Yosef, it was actually something that came from Rabba. So nevertheless, though, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef. Tosfos also discusses earlier in the previous perek, does this mean the halacha is like, these three cases are all here in Bava Basra. Does that mean that this rule applies only to things in Bava Basra, or does it apply to other areas, and therefore anywhere else in Shas? So therefore anywhere else in Shas, we'd have to have other criteria to decide whether the halacha is like Rabba or Rabbi Yosef, or is it across the board that nowhere else in Shas is the halacha like Rabbi Yosef against Rabba? Tosfos discusses that earlier. Some more cases involving people giving presents, giving matonis. The Gemara says, "Ahu deshada," and we have to figure out who it goes to. "Ahu deshada piski deshiroi lebesi." There was once a person who sent pieces of clothing, pieces of shiroi, actually means silk, to his house. Navapashtos, that he didn't say who he's sending it to. So the question is, who gets them? These are the kinds of things that would be used specifically for women's clothing. So Amar Abasi, they're not necessarily specifically for women's clothing. Amar Rabami, Haruyin Labonim, whichever of these pieces are suitable for men's clothing, as far as the fabric, the style, whatever, Labonim, then it means implicitly he wanted to give it to his sons. Haruyin Labonis, whichever ones are more suitable for women's clothing, then it goes to the women. Then it goes to the daughters. What happens if it can be for either one? Then you have a machlokas rishonim on that, whether they split it or whether it goes to the sons. Anyway, the Gemara points out, v'layamonet el zeles le kalsa. Now that would only apply though if he doesn't have daughters-in-law. Aval isle kalsa, but if he has daughters-in-law, le kalsa shodo, then we have more reason to think that he's sending them to his daughters-in-law, that they should be able to wear them. And the point is, in other words, even maybe over his daughters, because if his daughters are married already, then their husbands should be providing for them. So therefore, we have more reason to assume that he would be giving to his daughters-in-law where his sons are supporting them. So therefore, he's sending to his sons, meaning that they should in turn give them to their wives. So Ibn Sevan, on the other hand, if his daughters are not married yet, then we have to say it goes to the daughters, Lashovak bin Sevakalse, then we would say there'd be no reason for us to assume that he would ignore his daughters and give to his daughters in law, because then Faket, he wants to give it to his daughters so that they'll have nice clothing and they'll have something to get married with, so therefore it's more likely that he's giving it to his daughters. So in short, in other words, we have to evaluate
what's about his own wife.
These are the kinds of things that go that are typically for younger women, but actually the Ritva actually brings up that point. The Ritva points out yesh omnim that all of this would apply only if he doesn't have a wife, so like his wife passed away or he divorced or whatever, or where these clothing are not suitable for her. But otherwise, we would have to assume that he sent it to his wife. But the Ritva himself disagrees and says the fact that the Gemara didn't mention that point implies that we would have to discuss whether it's going to his sons, his daughters-in-law, but not necessarily that it would go to his wife unless he specified that. Okay. Another case. There was a case of a person who said, my nechosim should go to my sons. Now, Havale bra ubrata, he had one son and one daughter. The question is, now he's dead now, we can't ask him, mi koru inshi the bra bonai, would a person use the word bonai in plural to mean only his son? Now you would have to ask, if he's doing that, what would be the point of it? After all, if he has only one son, then his son is yaushining everything anyway, and in that case, ulo saluki lebrata mi isu ka'asi. Then maybe what he wants to do is he wants to say that we should not give the daughter the isu nechosim. The Gemara mentions in Ksubas and in other places that when the father dies and he has a daughter who's unmarried yet, then or he has more than one daughter, then each of them is entitled to isu nechosim, one tenth of the nechosim that she'll use for her wedding expenses. So now, maybe by saying specifically that I wanted to go, so he said I wanted to go to my sons in plural. Maybe that means dafka the one son, and what it would mean is he wants to say that in this case, he's implicitly saying that the daughter shouldn't be getting that isu nechosim, because if he hadn't said anything otherwise, then it would mean that she would. So now, by saying this, then he's taking that away. Now this is in parenthesis, and in fact Marshall takes it out because Tosfos asks, what's the point of that anyway? Even if we say that it means only his son, what would be the point of that? The son is yaushining everything anyway. So Tosfos explains that it means, for example, if we found a diatiki or a will or a shtar matana or whatever, then this would override it. But if we have these words in the Gemara, then you don't need that. Then anyway, there's a very valid reason that he would be saying that in order to take away the isu nechosim. Whatever the case, does it mean that, or maybe not? Maybe the word bonai means my children in general. Maybe people do not normally call a son my children in the plural. And then he means to include the daughter in the matana, where each of them is going to be getting half. So what happens? Omer Abai, Toshma uvnei Don Choshim. So Abai says, here you have an example from a pasuk where the Torah says the sons of Don were Choshim. It's only one son, and yet we call them sons in the plural. So you see that one son can be called sons in the plural. But Rava says, what kind of a proof is that? Maybe the reason it says the word b'nei over there is like what we learn in a braisa from the yeshiva of Chizkia, means shahoyu merubin kechushim shokone, means because Don had a lot of children or a lot of descendants, like the chushim of a reed. Chushim, Rashbam explains, first of all, it can mean where you have a bunch of reeds grow together in a thicket. You have a lot of times reeds grow, you don't just have one of them, you have a whole bunch of them that grow out from one root, very closely packed together. Another possibility that Rashbam says is chushim may mean the leaves or the joints on a reed, like you have, for example, on bamboo or on other reeds like that, where you have a lot of leaves on them and every joint from one part to the next, you have leaves growing on it. So therefore, so the pasuk uses the word chushim to refer to that. Tosfos points out that what does that mean? The fact is, when Don went down to Mitzrayim, he had only the one son, Choshim. So Tosfos explains that it means that maybe later on in Mitzrayim, Don had more sons, So they're not listed in the pasuk, but nevertheless they can still be. They're nevertheless he called his first son Chushim Al Shema Osid, that to represent the future that he's going to have more children. With that said, though, it could also mean that Marsha brings a couple of other possibilities. First of all, it doesn't have to mean that Don himself had more children. It can mean that Chushim had a lot of children. In fact, in the end, when it comes to the census of Bnei Yisrael in the desert, you find that Don was the second largest Shema, in the second census, Don was in Parshas Pinchas, that Don was the second largest Shema, even though they only came from the one son, Chushim. So in other words, even though there was only the one son, nevertheless, a tremendous progeny came from him. So we can say that Don himself, Taka, only had the one son, not like Tosfa said, that he had more sons in Mitzrayim, but from that one son, Chushim, came out a huge family of tens of thousands of people. In fact, Marsha says that may be in the census in Parshas Pinchas, when you have that number of Shevet Dan, it calls him not Chushim but Shucham. So we can say his real name was Shucham, but he's called in Parshas Vayigash, he's called Chushim to represent that in the future he's going to grow like Chushim Shalkana into this huge family. Anyway, the point is, Rava is saying, when it says Uvnei, maybe to hint at that point, not necessarily does it show that one son all by himself, without any children of his own, should be called sons in plural, not necessarily. Ela Omar Rava, Uvnei Falu Eliyav. So rather, Rava says, I have a different proof also from Parshas Pinchas, where it mentions over there the sons of Palu, who was a grandson of Reuben, that his son was, or actually, Palu was one of the sons of Reuben, so his, Ubnei, the sons of Palu, are Eliab, and it mentions only the one, Eliab, so we see that one son can be called Bnei. Rabbi Yosef Amov Nei Esan Azariah. Rabbi Yosef says you have a different pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that also does the same kind of thing. It mentions the sons of Esan is Azariah, and again it means it's only the one son Azariah. And nevertheless, we're calling him Uvnei. Now, why doesn't he like the proof from the pasuk from the pasuk in Chumash? The Torah Chaim says because he could say Uvnei Falu Aliyav, because the pasuk goes on to list Aliyav's children. He had a son Nemuel, and then he had the infamous sons Dasan and Aviram. So you could say it says Uvnei Falu Aliyav in token of that because he has those sons. But not necessarily with that show where he doesn't have any sons. So the proof from Divrei Hayamim is strong. The proof from Divrei Hayamim is stronger because it says where they were Uvnei Esan Azariah. And it doesn't say, doesn't mention children of Azariah. Yet we see that the word Bnei is used, so therefore, yes, Bnei can mean his one son, and the result of it would be, either like Tosfa says, it means that if we find a Shtar Matano or what have you, that seems to override that, nevertheless, it still all goes to the son, because that was the last thing he said, or as if we have the parenthesized words in the Gemara, then it means that he's saying that the daughter shouldn't get the Isur Nechassim. Okay. Another case. There was a man who said, my nechosim should go to my sons. Now, havaleh bra ubar bra. Now, he had a son, and he had a son himself had a son. So he only had the one son, but that son himself already has a son. So the question now is, the question is, koru inshi the bar bra bra oiloi. Do people call their grandson their son or not? If we say a person would normally call his grandson a son, then it would mean he's saying that half of the nechassim should go to you, my son, and half should go to your son. As opposed to not, then he just means that my nechassim should all go to you, my one son, and then your son eventually will yashin it after you're gone. The point of it is that Ashbam explains that it has to be that this grandson is specifically from the son. Otherwise, that grandson is Yarshining anyway, as we learned in the previous parak. If Yaakov had two sons, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven died and left a son, then Reuven's son is going to be Yarshining in place of Reuven, and Shimon is going to be Yarshining the other part. Then there's no question; it goes to both of them. But here, where it's Reuven's own son, then the question is Reuven's own son entitled to a share of the nechassim or not? So the Gemara says, Rav Chaviva Amakoru Inchi the Ba Bra Bra. Rav Chaviva says, yes, people might call their grandson a son, and therefore that means the grandson himself is entitled to a share of the Yerusha. Ma Bravashi Amaloi Koru Inchi the Ba Bra Bra. And Rav Bravashi says, no, people don't normally do that. So therefore, it means that he just meant to give it to his son, and he used the plural because, like we just said, the plural can be used even of one son. And the Gemara says, Tanya Kava said that a Ma'ar Ben Ravashi, we learn a Braisa like the way Ma'ar Ben Ravashi says it, Hamudu Hanah Mibonim, for example, if a person makes a neder not to have Hanah from so-and-so's sons, Mutu B'Bnei Bonim, then he's Mutu to have Hanah from that person's grandsons. So even though, and it doesn't matter, in other words, whether he said, doesn't matter whether that other person has one son or many sons or whatever, either way, when he says, then it doesn't include the grandchildren. So the same way over here, when he says that I'm giving my nechosim to my sons, it doesn't include the grandchildren, it just includes the sons. It just includes the son or sons themselves. Rashbam points out, now this depends actually, when it comes to Pru or Ru, then grandsons do count as children, which is Negea, as far as, here we were just learning it, we're in the middle of learning it in Ein Yaakov currently, where a person had, for example, a son and a daughter, and then one of them died and left behind a child, that still counts towards Pru or Ru, but not in this case over here, when it comes to Yerusha, then we don't say that, because in Lotchim B'nai Adam, we're saying that children doesn't necessarily include grandchildren.